This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Jennifer Law with us on the show. Jennifer is founder and president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network. A former pediatric critical care nurse, Jennifer has 25 years of experience in the healthcare field. She is routinely interviewed on radio and television, including ABC, CBS, PBS, and NPR, among others, and her writings have appeared in a number of publications, including the American Journal of Bioethics. Jennifer has produced or directed several critically acclaimed documentaries on third-party reproduction, including Exploitation, Anonymous Father's Day, and Breeders, which focuses on the harms of surrogacy. We're going to be talking with Jennifer today about surrogacy, the dangers to women and children, and why she believes it should be banned, including here in North Carolina. Jennifer, thanks so much for being with us today on Family Policy Matters.
Thanks for having me, John. It's good to be with you.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Now, Jennifer, for some of our listeners who may be unfamiliar with the term, would you describe what surrogacy is, what it means, and how frequently it is used in the United States?
Yes, surrogacy is literally a woman being hired or contracted with to carry a pregnancy to term, knowing that when the child has been born, she will surrender that child to whoever the intended parents are. The surrogate can either contribute her genetic material as well as her womb, her uterus, or she can just contribute her uterus. And we talk about different forms of surrogacy, and sometimes the word traditional surrogacy is thrown out there, which means she's literally the biological, genetic, and birth mother, or gestational surrogate, which means she's just, as the TV shows like to say, she's just the easy bake oven, baking cupcakes for a nice couple. So those are the different types of surrogacy, but it's the understanding that a woman, once she delivers the child, will surrender that child to whoever's contracted her to carry the pregnancy to term. As far as numbers in the United States, John, it's really hard to get a handle on that because we don't track and monitor. This is one area of medicine which is largely operating at a multi-billion dollar level here in the United States with little oversight and regulation. So it's hard to know when a baby is born in a labor and delivery hospital in the United States, you know, who are the parents, and is this a child born of a surrogacy contract? We do know that the numbers are trending up. They're trending up because this has become more mainstream. It's become more acceptable within our traditional faith communities who see this as a wonderful way to help people have families. And now with the Supreme Court ruling on marriage, we're seeing a much more forceful, if you will, policy shift to allow same-sex couples, in this instance, homosexual men, to become parents through paid surrogacy.
Interesting. Well, Jennifer, you've written that surrogacy really represents the commodification of women's bodies. Explain for us, if you will, how surrogacy reduces women to essentially commodities.
Yeah, well, it's very clear that, you know, what the woman is being paid to do or contracted to do is to use her body for 9 months in a pregnancy and deliver a child. And often this is managed by contracts, which leave the surrogate mother very exposed. And at the end of the day, she's being paid to deliver a product, a baby. If that's not a commodification of a woman's body and a child, we call that human trafficking. We call that baby trade. We call that baby buying and baby selling. You know, that's what is really happening here. And you can't dress it up and make it any other way other than literally the employment, the hiring of a woman to produce a baby for sale.
And what kind of money are we talking about here in speaking in terms of this contract? What are we talking about as far as the amount of money that a woman might receive for a surrogacy contract?
Again, this is a market-driven enterprise. This isn't medicine. You know, you don't negotiate with your doctors normally, you know, when you enter into the healthcare system. But this is a market-driven thing. So I'm in California, out here in Hollywood land, where we have very wealthy celebrities. You know, surrogates can make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Repeat surrogacy pays even better because you have been proven to demonstrate that not only can you carry a pregnancy to term, but you won't change your mind and demand that you have rights and access to this child. It's very common for surrogates to deliver twins or triplets. It's very expensive, this technology. It's largely high failure rate, so a surrogate is encouraged to deliver a multiple birth so that the consumers, the buyers, you know, get a baby in the end. That's what this is all about, you know, getting a baby. So a surrogate who's willing to carry twins or triplets can even get, you know, higher amounts of money because of the risk and the onerous effort on her body to produce, you know, three and four babies at a time.
Well, I imagine that based on the potential financial benefits involved, that it could be very tempting for some individuals to offer their bodies for this, especially women who are struggling with finances. I know that you've argued that the practice of surrogacy really depends on the exploitation of poor women. Give us some examples of how the surrogacy industry does exploit poor women.
You don't have to, you know, go very far in just picking up a newspaper or a tabloid magazine and seeing the faces of surrogate mothers. You know, outside the United States, it's low, indigent, uneducated, poor women of, you know, destitute poverty in India, Thailand, Nepal, Mexico, where there's a booming, growing market. Here in the United States, military wives are heavily recruited and marketed to serve God, to serve country, to serve another couple and help make dreams come true and become a paid surrogate. So, you know, you'll never see, again, back to the Hollywood tabloids, you'll never see the wealthy Hollywood actress offering to be a surrogate mother for her low-income housekeeper. It will always be the low-income woman who is serving couples of affluence. How many affluent women want to be pregnant for 9 months only to help somebody and deliver a baby at the end of that pregnancy to a low-income woman? It doesn't work that way. And we are naive if we think that wealthy women are serving the poor. It's the poor serving the wealthy.
Right. Well, Jennifer, in your documentary, Breeders, you tell the stories of some women who have been surrogates and really highlight how they were harmed by this practice. One of the harms of surrogacy involves the drugs that are used to prepare women to be surrogates. Tell us a little bit about those drugs and the dangers involved with them.
You're obviously having to trick a woman's body into becoming pregnant in a very unnatural way. You know, here is a woman who's not, you know, in the conjugal act, if you will, of marriage, becoming pregnant the old-fashioned way. She's being manipulated through powerful hormones to prepare her uterus to accept the pregnancy that's not of her own. And so these women do have to take hormones to not only prime and prepare their uterus to accept an embryo into the womb, but then they also have to stay on extended periods of hormones to actually, you know, secure that pregnancy, that the embryo is implanted and that the pregnancy is humming along. Because it's an unnatural thing we're doing here, and so we're trying to mimic, if you will, nature by inducing these hormones. In our film, Breeders, we did, you know, we tell the story of four different women. And the women that you'll hear from in the film, we have traditional surrogates in the film. We have gestational surrogates in the film. We had surrogates who were helping family members have a child. We have surrogates who were helping strangers. We had surrogates who were doing it for free, purely altruistic, and those that were being paid because they needed the money. And no matter which way you slice the argument, all of these women regret their decision, and they regret it because of health risk and health complications, and because of bonding and attachments to the children that they were carrying, and a whole host of other reasons.
Well, you just touched on this, and that is the negative emotional effects that women suffer as a result of being surrogates. Tell us about the experiences that you've seen with that.
John, you know, you introduced me and said that I was a pediatric critical care nurse. We work so hard in maternal child health to connect mothers to their babies in utero. I took care of severely premature babies for many years. That, you know, we work very hard in those instances to connect mothers and children together because it is an important, real, necessary, good bond. And in this area of surrogacy, we just say, oh, that doesn't matter. It doesn't harm the child. It doesn't harm the mother. And we've seen over and over again that it is a wound, and it's a wound to mother and child. I've interviewed what we call serial surrogates, who they suffer postpartum depression, you know, because they go home from the hospital and they don't bring a baby home. And so what do they do to fill that void? They get pregnant again because there's a grief and there's a brokenness. One of the women in our film was born of surrogacy, and she talks about that brokenness of that bond and that feeling that she was a commodity, knowing that her birth mother sold her for $10,000, and what that does to your psyche, if you will, your emotional health. I've seen the larger impact on little children in the home. What do little children in the home learn when they know mommy's not keeping this baby? One little boy was asked in the grocery store when his mother was visibly pregnant, oh, do you want a brother or a sister? And he said, oh, we're not keeping this baby. We're giving it to a nice lady that can't have a child. And what is the impact on little children who grow up thinking mommies keep some of their babies and mommies give some of their babies away? So we're only now sort of, you know, hitting the tip of the iceberg, if you will, on not only the impact to the mother and the child in the surrogacy arrangement, but the larger, you know, social family, if you will, and other children in the home and marriage. What's the impact on surrogacy in the marriage of a surrogate mother?
Well, considering all these concerns, how is surrogacy regulated in the United States? Are there federal laws regulating it? What's the status?
Sadly, the status in the United States is very much an ad hoc patchwork situation. We do not have any federal legislative overlay in this area of these new emerging reproductive technologies, which is very unfortunate. So what we have is a patchwork. My state, California, is very liberal, very, you know, anything goes. We call it the wild, wild west. You know, where did Elton John come twice to have his children with his male partner? It just shows anything literally goes out here in California. We've had, you know, legislative victories, you know, 3 years in a row with Governor Jindal and Governor Christie, you know, pushing back on progressive liberalizing surrogacy laws in those states. So it's sadly a patchwork, which encourages people to fly from one state to the next and hop around and shop for, you know, the best price that they can get in hiring a woman to have their babies. Quite unfortunate.
What is the status of surrogacy in North Carolina?
Well, that's why I'm happy to meet your acquaintance so we can work together. You know, right now, North Carolina really doesn't have laws governing surrogacy. How surrogacy does operate, and it is operating in North Carolina, is sort of under the auspices of your contract law and your adoption laws. So North Carolina is open to and friendly to gestational surrogacy. And I would love to see, you know, that change in North Carolina to stop surrogacy in North Carolina.
I appreciate that. I know that it's something that seems to be coming more and more on the radar screen as people become more aware of it, as it becomes more widespread. So it's definitely an issue that the North Carolina Family Policy Council is very interested in and will be pursuing legislation in the future. Now, Jennifer, you argue that simply regulating surrogacy is not the answer and that we really should ban it altogether. Why is regulation not enough, in your opinion? What are your thoughts from that standpoint?
In my mind, surrogacy undermines the dignity of women and children. It undermines the dignity of the family, and it exploits women and it exploits children. So if something is undignified and it's wrong, why would you regulate it? You know, we don't regulate slavery. We don't regulate human trafficking. Things that we have decided are, you know, undermining the dignity of the human person. So, in my mind, regulation only protects the money stakeholders.
Well, that's a great place to close, and unfortunately, we are just about out of time. But before we leave, Jennifer, I want to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about this issue and about the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network.
I would drive everybody to our website, which is www.bbc-network.org. Our website is full of all kinds of valuable information and resources.
Jennifer Law, thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters today and talking about the harms of surrogacy and what we need to do here in North Carolina on this issue. We are grateful for your time, for your insights, and for your interest.
My pleasure. Thank you, John.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800. or visit our website at ncfamily.org.